Okay. Welcome to Guffman. I'm Alex. With me is James.
Greetings.
Just before we get started, we would like to get you to check out our website, themcguffman.com. We have a lot of content up there. Last week, we put out a podcast on the Mighty Ducks trilogy.
Woo!
Yeah, a podcast that's actually been getting really good reviews from people who listen to it. It has been described as far and away our funniest podcast.
And what was our claim to fame as a result of it?
If you Google Mighty Ducks, Hawks, Hitler Youth, we are the first hit you'll get. So
boom.
Thanks, Mike Rainsbury. Thanks, yeah. Mike Rainsbury, for directing me to that. But no, people that have listened to it have actually really, really enjoyed it. And it is actually our most popular episode of the podcast. So we recommend checking it out. I also, on this past Tuesday, I posted something that I wrote about celebrities, why we care about celebrities, why specifically I care about Shia LaBeouf. And I don't know. That's worth reading as well. But listen to the Mighty Ducks instead. It's probably more entertaining. Also, check out our website every once in a while, themcguffman.com. We've always put out a couple things a week. Follow us on Twitter, at themcguffman, where you can get such zingers as political satire, like during the third presidential debate when I called out Romney for using the word tumult three separate times. So, hashtag debate 2012. Definitely follow us on Twitter. Send us emails, themcguffman@gmail.com. If you listen to the Mighty Ducks podcast, just a quick update on our contest. Nobody has gotten the correct answer yet. So keep sending in your answers there. And I'm just so excited to talk about our podcast topic today, James. We should just get to it. I just can't wait to talk about Alex Cross.
Okay.
It's going to be the best. Don't ever cross Alex Cross. Actual tagline. Tyler Perry. Let's go to the theme song.
Welcome to the MacGuffin Men. This episode is brought to you by The Daily Show, teaching you to hate Fox News one Jewish grandmother impression at a time. And now, here are Alex and James.
Welcome back from the theme song.
I totally didn't prepare for the Alex Cross podcast.
Oh, really? What are you talking about?
I'm talking about The Daily Show with Jon Stewart.
Okay, let's just do that. From the MacGuffin Men's World News Headquarters?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, let's just talk about that instead.
Okay, let's do that.
Honestly, Alex Cross sucked. Let's not talk about it.
Do you want to start at the beginning when it was not The Daily Show with Jon Stewart? Daily Show with the guy from Old School?
Yeah. Or Craig Kilborn. Or we could call it by his name. Or at the time, he was probably the guy from SportsCenter. So there's that.
Yeah. And I don't think people describe Craig Kilborn as the guy from Old School.
No. I don't think they describe him, period.
When you say the guy from Old School, I think it takes you a while to get to Craig Kilborn.
There are at least like a solid 8 guys before him.
Juliette Lewis?
I was just counting men. I wasn't even counting women. We're up to 13. 13 people before we get to Craig Kilborn.
The Dan Band? Anyway. This wasn't always hosted by Jon Stewart.
That is true. Did it come on... on the air in 97, is that correct?
I think so. Yeah, and it was hosted by Craig Kilborn for a few years. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, it did well enough to stick around on Comedy Central, mm-hmm. which doesn't demand high ratings.
No, definitely not.
It's just not a big network, so it kind of never really blew up, but continued to go on for a few years with Kilborn.
Yeah, the thing with Comedy Central is sort of like, since the audience is smaller, you have more freedom, you have less people to have to impress, and if you can do it on a certain budget, then you've got a lot of freedom. Like, I mean, South Park wouldn't have gotten off the ground on any other channel, right?
Absolutely.
So, and this show probably debuted like a year after South Park did, so.
Yeah. Hmm. And then Jon Stewart.
Yeah.
Takes over.
Bye, Craig.
Bye, Craig.
I think Kilborn did it for 2 years. I think he was 97 and 99, and then Stewart started off in January 99.
Yeah, he started right at the beginning of 99, and then I certainly don't remember that point in the show's history.
Yeah.
Because I was 11.
Brag about it.
Not really watching that kind of stuff yet. Yeah. But no, it it did a lot better with him, and it was really the 2000 election that blew, like, really let the show blow up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because they always they do very well during election season.
Mm-hmm. Well, most political comedy tends to.
Yeah, and I guess we should mention with Kilborn, it wasn't as political.
Yeah. A lot of the same people, from what I understand, sort of carried on through Jon Stewart. Like Stephen Colbert was on Daily Show with Craig Kilborn before Jon Stewart came around. And he just sort of stuck around, and yeah, a lot of like some correspondents left, some writers left with Kilborn, but for the most part, it was still the same cast and crew, I guess, if we can call them a cast. But
yeah. Oh, and just Stewart was known for, you know, political comedy and had been working kind of in politics and comedy for a while. So he definitely helped steer the show in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
And it really seems to have worked. So
yeah. And there was one of the head writers that was brought on soon after after Stewart got a start was a writer for The Onion, I think. I wish I could remember his name. But John
Greg,
Stewart.
Greg Onion.
That's probably not correct. Is his middle name red or green? This is important. But no, I think Jon Stewart really credits him for helping the show develop its editorial voice, which Stewart also, like you pointed out, says really sort of found its voice in the 2000 election.
Yeah, and I mean, even now, it's always a more relevant show when they're, you know, is a political issue at hand. Obviously, a presidential debate is going to be one of those things.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, it's pretty easy to mine for funny jokes in a presidential debate, because if you put, you know, Mitt Romney standing up or even Obama standing up there for an hour and a half, one of them is going to say something funny. It's just going to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Do you want to talk about the editorial voice that it has? Because it seems like it isn't just a comedy show. And I mean, you can do a show about politics without really having a voice, I find.
Mm-hmm.
It's always going to, there's going to be a little bit of one, but I think it's particularly pronounced on The Daily Show. And it kind of gets caught in a weird spot where it is a comedy show, but then, you know, you hear some people say that, you know, you can learn more from watching The Daily Show than other news programs or, you know, infotainment shows, if you will. Yeah. And I just think it has an interesting little niche carved out where it is highly critical of politicians. It's also highly critical of the media's treatment of politicians and politics in general. But it's, you know, you'd primarily describe it as a comedy show if you had to just use one word to describe it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would.
Yeah, so do you want to, you know, kind of talk to us about the balance it finds there?
Well, it's not ever, there's no consistent balance, I find. I feel like it can change wildly from episode to episode.
You mean one show very just, you know, playing for laughs and one obviously trying to say more than the last episode?
Absolutely. And one episode that I remembered before it's not just me that this episode sticks in my head for is I think it was their last episode of 2010 when, this is when Jon Stewart was really pushing the bill to, being very critical of Congress for not passing the bill, to pay full benefits or whatever to the full first responders of 9/11.
Yeah.
And I feel like you and I have talked about this episode before because we lived together at the time it was on air, and he just sort of dedicated an entire episode to just sort of making sure that all of, I guess, The Daily Show's views, and from everything I read, The Daily Show's editorial voice is very close to Jon Stewart's voice, which makes perfect sense to me. But just sort of like getting, like, just sort of the why won't you pay benefits for these people? And I remember he brought four first responders out for interviews, and it was a very sort of like very serious. He didn't pause to crack jokes or anything. And it was all sort of like a very somber, serious episode. And the bill ended up getting passed, I think, even before 2011 rang in, but like very quickly. And I would imagine not a lot of bills get passed in Congress right before the, you know, the holiday season or during the holiday season. But that's sort of one episode that really sticks out. And every once in a while, there is sort of like an episode like that where Jon Stewart's like, okay, I need to, I'm going to say something on this episode. And it's always sort of like a, you know, they're fairly rare. Another one I remember, I think it was like a year before, it was a mildly famous, like, Jim Cramer interview. It was right after the financial collapse. And Jon Stewart was sort of calling him out on sort of encouraging people, I don't know, spend money. I didn't read a lot about it, but it's just, like, to refresh my memory. But it's something I recall being a big deal at the time.
Yeah, and I think it was around the time of the housing collapse. And he was...
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, he was just kind of encouraging people to... sort of people to make money off the situation, even knowing that it's at the detriment of people a lot poorer than them who could use that money a lot more.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I mentioned, those episodes, there aren't a whole lot of them, but it seems, I don't know, I feel like I've been watching The Daily Show, not consistently, but, you know, I probably watch on average like a week of their shows in a month. You know, like say they do 16 shows in a month, then I see four of them probably. And that's been sort of that way since like 2007, I would say. But it sort of feels like there's been more focus on, I don't know if it's necessarily as Stewart gets older or what, but it does seem like he's a bit more serious more often. That could also just sort of be the way I watch the show now, but
yeah,
it just does sort of feel like there has been a shift. It's still a very funny show. I wouldn't watch it. I doubt I would watch it if it wasn't also funny. But it does seem to attempt to be serious more often than what I recall from back in 2007 or so.
Yeah. Well, but the way that a lot of people do satire, which I mean, the show is highly satirical at times. Mm-hmm. He has those episodes where, yeah, that first responders episode, I remember that just being just a completely quiet audience. And
yeah.
I don't say they were a bad audience, but he was not trying to get a laugh.
Well, if they had they been whooping and laughing, I feel like they would have been a horrible audience.
Yeah. But just by the nature of satire, I mean, you get his liberal slant even outside of the serious episodes.
Yes, definitely. Like
he is trying to put his two cents in and is, you know, using his political views to make comedy, even in the episodes. I mean, obviously in the episodes that are funny, as I said, he uses comedy that way. But yeah, that comes through a lot. Mm-hmm. How do you like Stewart overall? I mean, we've talked about how it's kind of his voice that leads the show. And if you're going to say The Daily Show's political slant, yeah, I kind of have the same understanding as you that a lot of that is very much in line with his. I mean, he has writers and things like that, but I think he would select writers that maybe not always have his opinion, but can at least write in his voice you know, would write things that he feels comfortable saying.
Yeah. And just to go back to the sort of quote unquote liberal slant that we're sort of under the assumption that the show has, like, I mean, it does. It definitely does. And that shouldn't be surprising because I feel like how many, I don't know that there are a lot of comedians that I like whose like core ideas in their jokes I just don't agree with. You know what I mean? And, and I feel like that's sort of...
Dennis Miller.
I do not find Dennis Miller particularly funny.
No, you don't.
I thought he was hilarious as a Monday Night Football commentator. it's still so weird. I watched a clip of this Jets-Miami Dolphins game from like 2003 that's on YouTube, and he's just throwing in ridiculous references. I loved it. Anyways, irregardless. Briefly,
I loved that idea of let's just get someone really funny in.
Yeah.
It didn't land, obviously.
It's still funny. It's funny, not in the way they wanted. For those listening that don't watch football, I think it was for 1 year in like 2003, Monday Night Football put Dennis Miller as sort of like the third guy in the commentary booth. And he was just up there wisecracking while there were two commentators. It was amazing.
And he's a football fan, but he was not there to talk about football.
No, he was not there for X's and O's.
No, exactly.
Yeah. Anyway, but yeah, no, I think it's sort of just something in any comedy, And I mean, we wouldn't be talking about comedy that we don't like. You know, we don't have an episode about Larry the Cable Guy.
Yet.
Okay, fair. Good. It's good to leave that door open. Casey calls us wanting to do an interview. Specifically for my taste, I don't like comedians whose core ideas I just don't agree with, because you have to have something in common with a person to sort of be laughing at their jokes, I think. At least just at a sort of a very base level. And The Daily Show sort of reflects the way I think about most things. Like, I don't always agree, but I think it's, pretty solid 90%. And I think, I don't know, I feel like comedy writers that I like all sort of have a liberal slant. And The Daily Show is populated by writers that I like. So it's going to have a liberal slant. I do like Jon Stewart. I think he relies on like three things a little too much. But otherwise, like, I think he's a very funny person. And he's clearly very quippy. And I like people that are quippy. And, most comedians are, or most good comedians are. I think, like, outside of doing a few too many Jewish grandmother impressions or George Bush callbacks and stuff like that. Yeah.
There's a lot of Jewish grandmother jokes.
I know. I can't blame him for it. Whatever. No. I mean, when I was looking at how many episodes they've done, The Daily Show has existed for over 2,000 episodes. You're going to have some... You're going to have to recycle some bits.
Hitler did some Jewish grandmother impressions just because you talk so much, it's going to come up,
I am just going to keep silent.
Okay. Yeah. Do you like his interviewing style?
I do. I want to know what you think about Jon Stewart. Because you've got my opinion. I'm curious to know how you feel about him.
The people are only here for your opinion, Alex.
But you think more about comedy than I do. And you are more willing to think about comedy than I do. So I'm curious to know your opinions.
No, I like him. His serious side does come through. I mean, I know we've been discussing that, but, he's very smooth in his transitions between, putting a guest at ease. I mean, it's especially, you see it a lot when it's someone he doesn't agree with,
yeah,
but has respect for, mm-hmm. And I think he kind of respects anyone who comes on his show who is really right wing, because they're coming into his place. They have to know what the audience they're dealing with is. They have to know who the host they're dealing with is.
Yeah, the show's been around long enough that it's a known quality. You know what you're getting.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And it's still not huge, but.
It's there.
Yeah, and it's more culturally relevant than the size of his audience would dictate.
Yes, I think I would agree with that.
Yeah, and it's just one of the things that's part of the political media landscape that, he can say some things and Fox News will respond. And it doesn't have to be something absurd that would, get you on that anyone could get on TV saying, mm-hmm. He's just someone that people who even disagree with him kind of see him as a bit of I don't know if ambassador is the right term, but a bit of a figurehead of mm-hmm. the left.
Yes, I think that's a fair statement.
Yeah, so people who don't agree with him kind of take what he says as indicative of what a lot of people on the left do think. And as I said before, disproportionate to how large the audience of people who tune in every night is.
Yeah.
As I was saying, when people who are on that don't agree with them, I find them very respectful. I mean, I think we're going to talk about him versus Bill Maher later. much more respectful than Bill Maher is.
Yeah.
And, he doesn't lay down and just give softball questions at all, which is another thing I do like about him.
Yeah.
But he is very willing to hear someone out and have a debate with them.
Yes.
Which is a very good characteristic in an interviewer. But,
yes, listening is a very good characteristic in an interviewer.
Hear us, Bill Maher? No, you don't.
God doesn't exist!
Because you're talking again.
I'm just going to smoke weed and be an atheist.
Do you hear that, guys? I'm an atheist, really, I swear.
Sorry, I'm just going to repeat it one more time. Atheism.
But he'll talk issues with somebody he doesn't agree with, and I think in a very constructive, matter-of-fact kind of way, kind of bounce that back and forth maybe 3 or 4 times, then ease the tension a bit. And this is something I kind of want your opinion on is, you know what I mean, when, you know, he'll talk for a bit and then he'll say something funny and then kind of go back into that, right?
Yes.
You see that all the time, especially with politicians and pundits and things like that. Not yep. so much the entertainment people. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, he'll go back and forth. He'll sneak a joke in there and then he'll kind of get back to, you know, not the hardball stuff, but down to brass tacks, back to the issues.
Yeah.
Where does that come from? Is that him just being a naturally funny person, which we both agree is the case, and, you know, not able to pass up a good joke when he's set up for one? Mm-hmm. Is that him keeping in mind that this is a comedy show and he people watch to laugh? Or is it a bit more underhanded that he kind of puts them off guard and it's kind of a disarming trick and it's harder for other people to switch back between that talking point mentality when he's yeah. got someone like, you know, John Bolton or, you know, someone pretty far to the right, and then to the funny side and then back.
Yeah.
Because I think that he often talks about just, and he's certainly not the first person to observe this, but about how disingenuous politicians are and how much fluff they say. And he says this about politicians and, you know, people in the media who kind of make it more a theater and more of a spectator sport than, you know, a real debate.
Yeah.
So I think it's, you know, I think he definitely sees a lot of these people, even people on the left, whose policies he might agree with. I think he sees a lot of politicians as very two-faced, and they'll get into their political speak and you're not going to get much out of them. So I think, you know, is he trying to ground them again, get them back into that, you know, real person that he knows is deep in there under, you know, just talking points and yeah. fluff? And then, you know, is it harder for them to get back to those just talking points and, you know, nothing of substance if he's constantly bouncing them back and forth with that style?
Yeah. I don't think it's to keep anybody off balance. I really don't think he's sort of mischievous like that. I think it's a natural thing. And, just his background as being a stand-up comedian. I'm not a stand-up comedian. I've never been one. I have no aspirations to be. But from everything I know about stand-up comedians, it's just sort of like when you're starting out, nobody knows you. You're standing up there and all you want is people to laugh. And if people don't laugh for a certain amount of time, then you get really antsy. And Jon Stewart was in that environment for a while and was in comedy shows following that and is still in a comedy show. And it's just sort of, I think he's even mentioned this, that he's a comedian and he sort of starts to feel uncomfortable if nobody laughs over the course of a minute. I do think the humor can sort of keep somebody else off balance while Jon Stewart is easier to flip back and forth. I don't think it's on purpose necessarily.
And I think that's, you know, I wanted your opinion on, but I think that's, you know, where I land too. I think it is easier for him to swing back and forth between those two people. Yeah. And I think one of the reasons is that I don't think he's as separate, though, you know, I don't think he has as much of a two-person aspect to him that a lot of people do, at least a lot of the people he's interviewing, because like it or not, that is something that comes with public office. I mean, we all say we want politicians to be more honest and speak their mind, but there's great reasons that they don't.
Yeah, exactly. I actually mentioned this in the thing I wrote. It's, being interesting will always alienate somebody. And when you're a celebrity, you can't afford to alienate anybody. And that's sort of, that absolutely applies to politicians who are basically celebrities anyways. But another thing, a thing that kind of annoys me about Jon Stewart and in interviews, sort of like there are times when it sort of feels like there's no joke there, that he sort of feels an obligation to go for a joke. And
I think that's where I get that sense that he kind of wants to make it feel comedy. I mean, keeping in his mind that it's a comedy show, but yeah, I didn't really, that's probably right. That just coming from a stand-up background.
Yeah, I actually,
unconsciously, you're going to have to do that.
Yeah. And there was a moment in his debate with Obama last Thursday, or sorry, not debate.
I don't know if I'd call that one a debate.
No, yeah. Interview. But where he actually sort of got Obama off point a little bit, you know, because the Obama interview was very talking point heavy. It was just sort of Obama came out there and the first thing he did was like, okay, look, I got to say this thing real quick, and did, yeah, you know, a mini monologue, and then continued to do a variety of them.
Female soldiers that were there.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But there was a point in the interview where Jon Stewart sort of asked him an interesting question, then cracked a joke, and then Obama cracked a counter joke, and then Jon Stewart moved on. Like, he didn't actually give him a chance to answer. It was just sort of like, well, we got this joke out there, now we're moving on. And I don't think it was sort of like a conscious thing. I think he just sort of forgot. Like, I think it was just sort of a...
Yeah. What was the question?
I wish I could remember. I should have written it down. But it was something interesting that I would have liked to hear Obama's answer on, regardless of how it would have turned into something about women's issues. But
whatever. Yeah. Yeah. There was... just remembering one thing you said earlier about him, you know, feeling that pressure when there's not anybody laughing for a certain amount of time.
Yeah.
Is I remember him being interviewed, and spoiler alerts, he's Jewish. It was a question about...
Last name's Leibowitz. Let's get that out there.
someone was asking him about Jews and comedy and why they're, you know, such a small percentage of the American population, but are a pretty large percentage of famous American comedians that are Jewish. Mm-hmm. And I think it was someone asking him on his show, actually. I can't remember who it was. But... he said that, you know, so many bad things have happened to Jews throughout history that kind of when people look at them after, you know, if nothing happened to them in a while and people look at them, they kind of just start dancing now. And they kind of, you know, just kind of try to entertain so people don't start turning them into a scapegoat for anything that's happening around them.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it's funny that you say that, you know, with his stand-up background, with enough silence, he will just do that, yet... kind of within this larger framework, he feels that way kind of about his entire race and something that he, or his entire group there. And, you know, he's kind of turned a career out of that. So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a little bit more substance to it than just dancing, but yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Who else on the show do you like? Other than Jace, do.
I don't know. I was trying to, like, because I was thinking about this. Like, I think Samantha Bee is my least favorite correspondent.
What?
And that is not, that does not mean I don't like Samantha Bee.
It's you don't like women.
actually, no, because my favorite correspondent is a woman, although I guess she's not really a correspondent as much. She's a contributor. But,
You like her?
Who?
Wait, who do you like?
Sarah Bell.
Oh, okay. Yeah, she's, no, yeah. Okay, never mind.
Who I adore. Everybody should read more Sarah Vowell than they do. Even if you read everything she's ever written, read more. She's wonderful.
Yeah, no, she's even a contributor. I've only seen her as a guest.
She's done definitely two pieces, like segments of the show.
Yeah,
she did one about just after or just before American Thanksgiving last year. And yeah, she was wonderful. Kristen Schaal, I don't know that she even does it anymore, but she was killer when she was on.
She's a winner. I thought you meant the new girl they have, who I'm not a big fan of at all.
See, I she's gotten dramatically better because I was
the first few were just painful though.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. And I thought like this girl's horrible. There's no way she's much better now. Like,
yeah,
I think she's, you know, she's not, she's still not good. It's not like she's Asif Manvi or anything, but.
yeah, I always thought her material was fine and just she couldn't deliver it, which is why I wasn't saying they should fire her. They should just, you know, even if it's a little painful at first, just keep giving her airtime so she can find her stride on the show.
Well, and then I think they just did, I think this was a few weeks ago where they had Larry Wilmore, senior black correspondent, who I love. I don't know about you.
I love Best title on the show.
Well, definitely. But I also just like his whole thing. Like, I feel like I just get a big kick out of Larry Wilmore. But anyway, so they did this thing where they had to get John Stewart to cover his ears. And yeah, that whole bit was good. It was Wyatt Cenac, Larry Wilmore. And I think her name is Jessica. I forget her name. But yeah, that bit was good. And she was funny in it. And she's definitely gotten way better. And I feel she is promising. I feel she'll be funny. But yeah, no, there's like the correspondents that they have on the show are great. And like, we haven't even mentioned John Oliver yet, who is amazing. I love John Oliver.
No, he's probably one of my favorite ones going, but I really like Asif Manvi and I like Samantha Bee a lot.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know. There's just something about her that just doesn't do it for me. I think she's just more, I think, abrasive than anybody else. And I just sort of mean that in the way that she sort of approaches interviews. Because the thing I hate about The Daily Show, and I don't mean hate, because sometimes it makes me laugh, but when they're sort of like interviewing people that don't know what this interview is getting turned into, all of those segments really make me uncomfortable. And John Oliver's really great at this without going too over the top. Like, he'll ask over the top things, and it's not just because he's British that it doesn't sound over the top, but it's just sort of like his demeanor. Like, he doesn't do weird faces as much as, like, say, Samantha Bee would. Yeah, I love John Oliver. I think he's amazing. He's got a podcast with Andy Zaltzman called The Bugle. It's a weekly podcast that is so funny.
Yeah.
And John Oliver forever. And he's been around forever.
Yeah. Well, since this was kind of our first case study one, do you want to talk about some of your favorite bits from the last week? Because I really like something I saw by John Oliver in those 4 days that we watched.
Was it the debate?
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that so much. How John Oliver did this a bit about the second presidential debate, the town hall debate.
Yeah. And one thing that they've been leaning on pretty hard lately is the media's coverage of the debate.
Yes.
As I said, I mean, this is a very political oriented show, but just as much, and sometimes even more so than politics, it's about the media.
Oh, I honestly think it's a 60-40 split about how much it's about the media and how much it's actually about politics.
Yeah, because, I mean, they definitely will cover, you know, what Obama says, what Romney says, what other politicians on either side of the aisle are saying. But, you know, 2-3 times a week, which is saying a lot for a show with 4 episodes a week, mm-hmm. they'll just put a, you know, 4 minutes in a row of just bouncing off how it was covered. You know, they'll show the clip once, which might be a 10-second clip, and then show, you know, 3 minutes and 50 seconds of what Fox News said about it, or,
yeah,
you know, MSNBC, you know?
And I said it was, I guess we might as well just talk about this and we'll get back to that piece about the debate. But honestly, like I said, 60-40, and I honestly think, at least for last week, that was a conservative estimate on the media side. And that's what I find I like the most about The Daily Show. And that's sort of going back to just sort of liking comedy that matches up with sort of my worldview, right?
Yeah.
Is that I can't watch CNN without getting furious, like just for 5 minutes, just because it just makes me the pandering for just for eyeballs that the 24-hour news cycle sort of like got is just, I feel like I would be far more interested in current events if I didn't, I don't know if news media wasn't so upsetting, like I love that Jon Stewart makes fun of this constantly. Like after when they're talking about the second debate coverage, there was a quote Jon Stewart says that killed me. It was CNN looked to be shooting a virtual dick in a box video. He had like a hologram desk, a hologram box on it. And there's just been so much of that shit on CNN. And I love that they just continue to rip on CNN for this. And they're just sort of like blatant trying to get people to watch by just doing whatever they need to do, no matter how much ridiculous technology or face monitoring that they need to bring in.
Yeah.
It just, that's what I love the most about the show, because I feel like, I don't know. Sometimes I feel like politics, everybody knows how big of a joke politics is, but not everybody knows how big of a joke the news media is, you know?
Yeah.
And that's sort of where I find more value in The Daily Show sometimes.
Yeah. And that joke, it is really funny. And I laughed, and it is kind of a throwaway joke
mm-hmm.
that I feel sums up so much of The Daily Show and its audience. Like, okay. The quick joke about the media. And it's not, you know, too deep or, you know, has a great point to it. But it's really funny. Dick in a Box, it was an SNL digital short. Like, I think most of the people who are going to get that joke are under 27.
I think Dick in a Box is one of those things that it reached a bigger or more demographics than you know, your standard digital short. My mom would get that reference, you know? Yeah. And I feel like a lot of moms would, you know, and just same with people older than 27, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's one of those jokes. I mean, it's just about, it's based on a pop culture reference.
Yes. Yeah.
It's at the expense of the media and kind of just how over the top and how, as you said, you know, they just pander for the eyeballs. And I think that's one of the big changes that happened in our life. I mean, we were really young, but the switch to the starting of CNN and the switch over to the 24-hour, you know, news media death hole, I think is the proper terminology
Yeah, that's definitely it.
That's one of the big transitions that affects politics in our lifetime, and at least the way that it reaches the masses. And Stewart would have been very conscious of it. He would have been working in political comedy at the time that all went down. So he knows it, you know, better than a lot of people do. Mm. And I think, you know, we were both media students at a point. I think that is what really speaks to this generation a lot. And I mean, older people definitely do watch The Daily Show, but it is predominantly viewed by people under 30.
Yeah, I think that's a fair statement. I feel like people like us and your brother, who's a few years older, like we're sort of aging with The Daily Show. I'm not going to stop watching when I turn 30, you know, like out of a social obligation, you know, you stop watching The Daily Show when you turn 30, you know, you stop caring about Ninja Turtles when you're 12, you stop watching The Daily Show when you turn 30. I really don't think I will stop caring about The Daily Show as long as it's good. But yeah, no, certainly now. But I feel like that audience, like the audience has grown over the decade for The Daily Show. And a big part of that is that people that were interested in it when they were 22 in 1999 are still interested in it now when they're, you know, over 30, but still very interested in what the show has to offer.
Yeah, and I just think, I mean, I know it's a subject that interests us more than probably the average person, but I think that it's just, we came up in such a media saturated environment that this show really hits a lot of notes for us because it dwells so much on that. And it does look at politics, but it looks at it through the lens of how it gets delivered to us and how it gets filtered and how it gets distorted and just kind of how much comedy can be mined from the way that people deal with politics. I mean, there's definitely just a lot of jokes of, especially when Bush was around, oh, Bush said this, isn't that dumb and funny?
Yeah.
But even during that time, there was a lot of, you know, look what CNN, or look how Fox is framing what Bush said to sound intelligent. I just think it is not generational because it affects everybody, but I think people around our age and definitely a few years older and younger, probably older, it matters too more because we see it with people older than us. But I think that really kind of adds to what people get from it, because I think people kind of feel, you know, left behind by the way the politics is reported like that. Yeah. And I mean, you said you can't watch it without getting upset.
Yeah. And I feel like I was left behind before, you know, I was conscious of it.
Yeah. No, I think a lot of people feel that way, that they get frustrated watching this. And, you know, if good comedy is anything, it's cathartic. And that's, you know, what this is, it looks a lot of at just how flawed the delivery of, you know, what's between politics and voters. And that's why there is so much media stuff on The Daily Show, because that's something that's so pertinent for our generation.
Yeah. And something I was reading was just sort of saying that Obama just, you know, post George W. Bush, Obama just says less silly things. He's just a better public speaker than George W. Bush was. So that's part of it as well. But I don't have a problem with the fact that they cover more media, because again, that's why I'm really interested in, or what I'm most interested in.
I think it's funny what kind of space Stewart's going to occupy, especially when, you know, it's 30 years down the road and he's not doing this show anymore. But I think this will be seen as a very important show and isn't going to be forgotten within a few years of it going off the air. Mm-hmm. But I think he's, you know, as I said, kind of an ambassador, kind of a figurehead for, you know, left-leaning people of this age. And I think it's interesting because that's a group that technology is so important to. And it's really kind of one of the defining things about our generation. I mean, technology is always changing, so it's always going to be tied in with every generation's identity. But I think for us, since it was just such an exponential change within our lifetime, mm-hmm. it's really going to be tied in with, you know, our generation.
Yeah.
And so it's just interesting that he's older and he, you know, you'll catch him making a bunch of jokes about how he doesn't understand this technology. But he came to prominence. I mean, we talked about him exploding in 2000, and that's when a lot of the, you know, digital technologies blew up too. And between now and then, things have changed so much. So yeah. he came to prominence at a time for, at a great time for the internet generation to love him, mm-hmm. but he's not, you know, a 20 something who's hip to all of it. You know, he's not left out in the dark, and there are certain ways that he does play to that generation. I mean, just the way he, like, it's a small thing, but the way he puts stuff up on the web, like, you know, the extended interviews.
No, yeah, absolutely.
Not just the fact that he does it, but how he does it. He doesn't close the interview properly if you just watch the TV show.
Yeah.
He says, yeah, okay, we'll do some stuff on the web. We'll be right back. You know, he doesn't say, you know, thanks a lot. You know, if you want to see more, check it out on the internet. But I'll say goodbye to this person properly for all you people watching on TV. Like, I feel he expects people to watch the rest of the interview online. And I don't know if that's people above him kind of encouraging that to say, you know, more hits on the website is obviously better for us. But I think not just him posting it, but the manner in which he seems to not close off an interview if you just watched on television.
Yeah.
I think that really kind of, you know, score some points with this internet generation.
Yeah. And I was trying to think about the last time I actually watched The Daily Show on television. And I honestly think it was election night in 2008 was the last time I actually watched The Daily Show on a television. And like, I still follow the show, and I doubt I would if full episodes weren't easily available on the internet. And just sort of tying into what I was saying about CNN driving me crazy and stuff like that. The reason, like, I was watching the election with a group of people and we were watching CNN, and then we're just like, we just can't deal with this. And then flip to The Daily Show's like hour and a half long coverage just because it was the only thing we could stomach. But going back to what you said about embracing technology. Yeah. I wouldn't watch The Daily Show on television, not because I don't like it enough to watch it on television, just because it's not on at a convenient point or at a convenient time. And we are very much a convenience generation. And like, I don't know, I would rather miss an episode of The Daily Show than miss an episode of 30 Rock. You know, it's just sort of how I am. And I'm glad I don't have to miss the episode of The Daily Show and then I can watch it online. And I agree with you that that is a very, very important point in its popularity or continued popularity going forward.
Yeah. How do you think he's going to be seen when kind of the dust settles? I mean, he can't do this for much longer. I mean, he could do it for 20 more years if he wants to, but I don't think he will.
I don't know. I'm also in no position to sort of put myself in his shoes, being that I don't know him at all, really.
Yeah.
I know the version of him that appears on TV, but I don't know him. And I don't know. He seems to certainly really love it. He doesn't seem to be looking for a way out in the near future, but I feel like, I don't know. I feel like there's a more serious news program out there for him that will exist because of The Daily Show's rising popularity. Like, there's the show Rock Center on Thursday nights at 10 on NBC with Brian Williams. Like, it's a news magazine show. I feel like Jon Stewart will have a show like that before within a decade.
Oh, really? You think he would really try to turn down the comedy?
I don't necessarily think he would turn down the comedy, but I wouldn't be surprised if he did. Yeah, that's just sort of, if I have to make a guess, that I think more likely than that is just continuing on with The Daily Show. I would be surprised if he left The Daily Show anytime in the next, 7 years. But if I had to pick something that I think he would do other than The Daily Show, it's sort of something that would involve being able to use the same amount of sort of, I guess, message control that you've got on The Daily Show, but sort of doing it under a more serious umbrella in some way. Like, not having to be entirely serious, but being more serious and sort of in a more traditional setting and trying to get more eyeballs and more ears to sort of agree with you,
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, I can't see a way that he's going to start listening to other people, as bad as that sounds, but like to go from the level that of control he's had. I mean, I'm sure he didn't have this amount of authority the day after Kilbourne left.
Yeah.
But it probably took just a few years, and now it has to be cemented. Like, he's really, really earned a place. I bet the show does better than anybody really would have guessed and is more culturally relevant across the board than anyone would anticipate. Yeah. It still makes money. I mean, I can't see that changing. And I think, as you said, the people who kind of grew up with it, I think, are going to stick with it. Mm-hmm. And then people younger than us who, hit that, I'm 17 and I'm politically engaged now. The Daily Show is such a great first step into that.
Yeah.
And I don't see that changing. Like, it's so accessible, and you're going to learn. I mean, you're going to enjoy it more if you really are politically engaged and you're, reading and watching other news. Like, if this isn't your only source for news, which I think bears mentioning that I think for a lot of people it is.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
There's definitely been points in my life where I was getting, most of my, felt like I was being kept up to speed with American politics purely off watching The Daily Show.
75% of what I know about American politics I got from The Daily Show.
Yeah. So, I think there is, you can enjoy it a lot more if you're following other things and, you can get that thing where you're reading a newspaper, you're watching something else, and you're like, oh, I can't wait to see what The Daily Show does with this. And you get more of the jokes if you know more of the information, obviously.
Yeah.
But I think people coming up are still going to find their way to it. And people that are into it now are going to stick with it. So
yeah,
I don't really see it falling apart without, barring something unforeseen.
Yeah. Just going back to what you said, I can't wait to see what The Daily Show does with this. Watching the second debate, the part where Romney, fake called, or I don't know, we'll put air quotes around it, calls out Obama about not calling Libya a terrorist attack.
Yeah.
I was like, watching that, like, first of all, watching that in the debate made me very excited when Obama was just like, get the transcript, Candy. Like, I died laughing. Pardon?
Did you say that one a little louder?
Oh my God. I thought that was so funny.
Moment. And Obama's a little bit of a dick in it, which is, like, oh, he could so much more of a dick with that.
He's so angry that whole time too. And because I watched the episode of I watched the Daily Show episode about it. And then the way they handled it was very, very funny. But just sort of like, I was happy to see that clip again a few times just to see just how angry Obama is and just how fed up he is at that moment. I got such a big kick out of it. But yeah. The Daily Show sort of focused on how Romney was like, oh, but that's not what you did. And then Obama half interrupts him and is like, okay, just continue. And Jon Stewart does a bit about it. And it's very funny. And that's sort of something that I was excited to see. And then happy that it followed through with what I had hoped. But
yeah
it's very good.
Go ahead.
No. If you're staying on the same point, keep it up.
Yeah. I just see Jon Stewart being looked back on so favorably. And obviously that's going to be more so by people on the left who watched the show while he was doing it. But as far as political comedians go, he's going to be, I can't see how he's not top three of our lifetime when all is said and done.
What other options are there?
Well, there's like Bill Maher, but yeah. He's, and he'll be up there, but he's less accessible.
Less funny.
Less funny, yeah. I like Bill Maher more than you do, but I can fully admit that he's less of a funny human being than Jon Stewart is. I think he probably has more interesting things to say, but is less funny. And yeah, he's on HBO, which is even less accessible than Comedy Network or Comedy exactly. Central. I mean, there's some other ones in the mix, but it's interesting because he kind of, just the way that the show kind of straddles this weird line between news and comedy, I think he kind of straddles this weird line between news reporter and stand-up comedian. And in a way, he'll be kind of like a more subversive...
More news anchor than reporter.
Yeah, no, definitely. News anchor is the right term. I was going to say he'd be more like a more subversive Walter Cronkite or something. I just see it as someone who... people really started to like and trust, and my money is on him doing this for at least 10 more years minimum. Yeah. And I think it's going to be someone who made a name for himself, just kept going with it, who earned a lot of people's trust. People are used to kind of seeing him last thing before they went to bed. I know it's changing because, as you said, the generation of convenience, people are going to watch it whenever the hell they want to watch it, which is great. Just because it's easier to get to, but I really do think he's going to be remembered so fondly, and again people who kind of align themselves with his politics are going to be definitely more favorable to him. But yeah, as you said, who else is there? I mean I can think of a few, but as far as people who are this politically focused, he's gonna be up there. Like, undeniably.
Yeah,
like there's Bill Hicks, but he was way more niche and a lot weirder. Like George Carlin, I know that's not our lifetime, but that's one of those guys that people say, you know, there's not that many people who kind of are in this generation who I think would kind of do the speaking truth to power kind of thing as well as he's going to be remembered for doing it.
Yeah, I don't even think you can count Bill Hicks in there either, just because of how unknown he is to the average person.
Yeah, I'm thinking, I guess, more inside a comedy community.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I agree. He's probably the most well-known political comic. I can't think of anybody else. But yeah, I guess
Dennis Miller.
Pardon?
Dennis Miller.
Shut up. I guess it's sort of a good point to compare him to Bill Maher, because Bill Maher's show, Real Time, is a good show. I like it.
Yeah.
I watch it as much as I can stomach it, and. And I think that Bill Maher's, I think this is something you said to me, that you feel like that show might be the most pure form of free speech on American television. And I couldn't disagree with that. I don't necessarily totally agree, but I can't think of another example. It's just sort of a reactionary, but no, there has to be something better. But yeah, no, I feel like Real Time is to... Bill Maher, what The Daily Show is to Jon Stewart. And I just, in general, find Bill Maher a more abrasive person, because he is a more abrasive person.
Absolutely.
And just sort of where you were saying that Jon Stewart will listen to somebody in an interview, Bill Maher will often talk over them. And not that Jon Stewart is this unimpeachable human being who has never talked over an interview in his life.
Yeah, and you can see when he's getting frazzled. He does a good job of trying to be respectful, but you can definitely tell when it's getting to him.
Yeah, whereas Bill Maher is just sort of, he's more of a steamroller than anything, and he'll just try and just talk over you. I really value Bill Maher's place on HBO, though. I think his show is very good. It's a very good show. It's a funny show. I find his show funnier than I find him. And I think some of the interviews he gets are still really good. But sort of the panel discussions particularly can really, really devolve quickly. But.
Yeah, it's Real Time is a much more adult show. Like, it is not nearly as accessible to 17-year-old stoned kid who wants to start caring about politics.
Yeah, but the Daily Show is sort of the gateway drug to real time.
Absolutely. That's what I was getting at. I mean, it's longer. There are, I mean, you'll get 2 minutes in a row, maybe, where there isn't a laugh on Daily Show, as I said. Whereas Bill Maher is happy to let things play out. And sometimes his idea of playing things out, which is yelling, but it's not just going back to a joke. It's, you know, let's call out exactly what you said. Let's really talk policy. And for a comedy show, for a Comedy Central show, for a news show, Daily Show is gets to a lot more policy than a lot of things on a news network does, but real time even more so.
Yeah,
and less entertainment guests.
Yes, that's true. Oh my God, I had a point, but I totally forgot. Let's compare him to another Bill, I guess.
Bill O'Reilly?
Yeah, let's talk Jon Stewart and Bill O'Reilly, because they have this weird sort of this weird relationship that I know you're very fascinated by.
Yeah, I like it. I mean, I'm so happy when I see Bill O'Reilly is going to be on Daily Show, or Jon Stewart's going to be on O'Reilly Factor.
Yeah,
like I love the relationship they have. It's so funny how like quickly Stewart will take up the part of just the, like, not even devil's advocate, because that sounds too sophisticated, but just like someone to just poke fun at him, someone to prod him along, like someone who just, you seems delighted to try to get under Bill O'Reilly's skin. And Bill O'Reilly doesn't let it happen, to his credit. Like, I can tell you a lot of things I disagree with Bill O'Reilly about, but I actually have tons of respect for the guy.
No, I agree with you.
I respect that he continues to do shows like that. And like, he does What Up With That. Like, I know he's there to plug a book and stuff, but he's funnier than people give him credit for.
Bill O'Reilly's a pretty funny guy. He's not unintelligent, that's for damn sure.
Yeah, it is funny to see them interact, though.
Yeah, and it was just sort of I guess it was just called The Rumble that happened earlier this month that I was very interested in, and I watched it, and it was just sort of, it just reinforced why I kind of respect Bill O'Reilly, because he had to have known going into, did you watch this?
No.
Okay.
I know what it is. I didn't see it though.
Yeah. Okay.
You can explain it to people who don't. But.
Okay. I just want
everyone to know how smart I am.
Okay. It was a debate between Bill O'Reilly and Jon Stewart, just like a presidential debate, except neither of them was running for president. And it was streamed live on the internet for $5. I was very, very interested in it when it was announced, and I was like, I will totally watch that. But my main worry was that it wasn't going to be a neutral audience. And when the debate started, the moderator actually was like, okay, we've told the audience to keep it down. We need this to be a neutral environment, all this stuff. And I was like, good. Because like, I would love them to be on a truly neutral environment and be able to actually really debate.
One thing I hate about real time, but continue.
Yeah. Yeah. And it ended up not being that. Like, the audience was very obviously pro Stewart, and, but it just sort of made, you know, it was still interesting and totally worth watching. But it could have been so much better. But that alone made me respect O'Reilly more, because O'Reilly had to know he was going into the Daily Show's version of a zoo, and he still went in and still made his points. And it was interesting, if only for that aspect. But it was good. It was worth watching. But I would like to see them do it again and absolutely keep the crowd down.
And there are some things where I just don't see the need for a crowd. Like, I think a lot of time even Bill Maher gets frustrated with his crowd. Like, he tells them to be quiet, and he hates how much they cheer for people in entertainment. Like, he'll have Nobel Prize winners and like world leaders on, and they get no applause. And then, you know, Ashton Kutcher or something comes on, who is surprisingly well-spoken on real time when you see him.
Yeah.
But I don't see the need for an audience on some of these shows. I mean, they're both comedians, so they want to do their monologue and they want people to laugh, obviously. But when it gets to some parts, I find the audience just detracts so much from it.
Yeah, that's fair. I feel like there's just sort of a, on average, it helps more to have an audience than it does to hurt.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it definitely sways stuff. Yeah, go ahead.
I just sort of want to bring it back to the actual last week of The Daily Show that we actually watched, because I said we were going to yep. do this, and then called Jon Stewart out on saying something and not coming back to it. So we're coming back to it, damn it. Yes. So we were talking about the bit that that John Oliver did, where he got a bunch of people to watch the second presidential debate and give their comments. One was a bored teenager who was my favorite. She was amazing.
The easily bored teenager.
God, she needs an Emmy immediately. guy who recently had knee surgery, an aura expert.
I didn't even get the knee surgery joke.
It was just funny. It's just like, it had no reason. It was just sort of that he had knee surgery. That's just a funny thing to say. And then just ask them how he felt about people bending knees in front of him. You know, it was wonderful. But,
the tie store.
Yeah, exactly. And then he goes, after he gets all these brilliant, wonderful, analysis from these people, goes to another focus group who's watching the first focus group and gets their opinion. And this is something that is my favorite part of The Daily Show, if I had to boil it down to one thing, more than being funny, which it is, and this bit is very funny, is that at the end of the bit, he runs down the hallway, goes down some stairs, and there's this one lone Ohio voter sitting watching the debate. And he asks John Oliver asks the Ohio voter who won the debate. And the Ohio voter says Obama. And John Oliver's like, okay, that's all that matters, because you're from Ohio. Ohio is all that matters. And it's just sort of like all this sort of pomp and circumstance about a debate analysis and all that stuff doesn't really matter if the person isn't from Ohio, you know? And I just thought that was I thought it was a funny bit. And I like that even just Jon Stewart segments where he's just at the desk, they always sort of come together to a sort of strong point that sort of like, this bit was funny, but it was always leading somewhere, and it was always leading to an ending that I want to be sort of at least thought provoking, or we, the writers, want to be thought provoking. And that's my favorite thing about The Daily Show by far. That's why I don't think my viewership would immediately like reflexively go down if Jon Stewart left the show. You know, obviously if they have a horrible person replace him, then eventually it would. But I think immediately I would keep watching the exact amount that I was now, because I feel like it's carved out this really strong place, and it's always funny. Even if, you know, I don't love the jokes or don't love the things they're joking about immediately, I know that they're at least going to try and have a point, which is something that all good comedy, or all, in my opinion, all good comedy really has. All of my favorite comedy shows always have a point, my favorite stand-up comedians as well. And there has to be a talking point underneath the humor. And I think that's something that The Daily Show has. And it's something that The Daily Show needs to keep having to remain interesting. And I think that's bigger than Jon Stewart. I feel like Jon Stewart was clearly a big part of the show's editorial voice. But I don't think he's necessarily... he needs to be there for it to continue. And I mean, we were both talking about how we don't necessarily think he's going anywhere. Actually, you know, we both said neither of us thinks he is anytime soon. But I feel like the show sort of has a voice that can continue past Jon Stewart. They just sort of have to find somebody who's as good at interviewing as Jon Stewart is. And, somebody who's also funny, I suppose, would be a thing. But
yeah. Well, just to go back to that, like that joke, which is very funny, and the whole bit's really funny.
Bored teenager shout outs again.
Watching, like, because they did some jokes earlier about watching the debate with the audio off to see who won, and then they did watching the debate with audio from a CSI episode,
yeah.
which was a great joke. But yeah, that joke, I mean, if we look at that whole bit from a comedic structure standpoint, like, there are some big laughs, funny, 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 it's getting funnier, like, you know, they take it down to another level when they have a focus group to watch that focus group, they take it down to another one with that Ohio voter. But it really, like, that joke, the very last joke about, you know, this is the only vote that matters because you're from Ohio. It is a funny joke, but it's totally a downbeat. Like, everything's building, and that's a good joke, but it goes down. And for satire, that works. And especially for this bit of satire they're doing right there, it really does work, because it's all these jokes about, you know, politics, you know, the way that the Electoral College is set up, that Ohio voters are, you know, so disproportionately important. it's also a joke about news media, the way that they're overanalyzing all this stuff, and really it's going to come down to a vote of only a few people in a certain state. And it, yeah, just the way that it drops onto that downbeat at the end, structurally, I think that works so well for satire. And it's something that they do a lot.
Oh, yeah,
and
pretty much every segment.
Yeah, like, and, you know, it's all with satire, it's all about pointing out ridiculous things, but ridiculous negative things and things that are bad and things that are having a, you know, that are detrimental on the way things function. So to drop down on that, to go to that downbeat right at the end, you know, you get a laugh out of it, but you're kind of left with this sinking feeling, which I think from a satirical comedic standpoint angle just totally drives it home.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And they certainly know that because they do it so often.
Yeah.
But no,
do we want to end on that downbeat or?
Yeah, basically. Well, I mean, we've got that downbeat, but now in a little upbeat note, check our website, themcguffinmen.com. We've got all kinds of content. Like I talked about at the beginning of this episode, I won't rehash that. But next week, we'll probably have an episode about Cloud Atlas. I hope you can't hear all the screaming that's going on in my apartment behind me. But if you can, that's what's happening.
We can.
Okay.
Talk about an upbeat.
Yeah, no,
really
apparently
about next week's episode.
The amount of people in my apartment is apparently like multiplied by 10 since we started recording this podcast. I don't know who's yelling. But anyways, follow us on Twitter at themcguffinmen.com. Maybe you will get tweet updates as to why there's so much screaming in my apartment.
Two updates.
I'll tweet it immediately after we stop recording. So like 2 days ago is when I tweeted it. If you're listening to this.
Prepare to understand a tweet from 2 days ago.
Yeah. And now that we've significantly confused the timeline of everything.
Like Cloud Atlas.
Exactly. We'll be back next week to talk about Cloud Atlas. And I'll be writing a review of Kendrick Lamar's new album, Good Kid, Mad City. So be sure to check back for those things. See ya.
Thanks for listening to The MacGuffin Men. Be sure to check out themcguffinmen.com for supplementary links, articles, and more. Thanks for listening.